it's unfortunate it's so controversial, but I think it's important that the students in this class at least be somewhat conversant with some of the real issues, some of the political issues that are involved in this matter. As you know, as we described last week at some length, a person not permitted to carry from a Shisayokid to a Shisarabim, or vice versa, or 4 hours in a Shisarabim, min HaTorah. And by rabbinic law, one may not carry from a Shisayokid to a Carmelis, or a Shisarabim to a Carmelis, or 4 hours in a Carmelis. What is a Carmelis? A Carmelis is something which real issues, starting with political issues that are involved in this matter. As you know, as we described last week at some length, the person is not permitted to carry from a Shisayokid to a Shisarabim, or vice versa, or 4 hours in a Shisarabim, min HaTorah. And by rabbinic law, one may not carry from a Shisayokid to a Carmelis, or a Shisarabim to a Carmelis, or 4 hours in a Carmelis. What is a Carmelis? A Carmelis is something which is not a Shisarabim, but it's not really a Shisayokid either, neither here nor there. So by Torah law, it's called a Makom Ptur. Makom Ptur is a free zone. You can carry from a Shisayokid there and from a Shisarabim there. It's a free zone. Of course, the free zone by rabbinic law is limited to a very rare case, the type of a fire hydrant. That's a Makom Ptur. It's important to know that. If you're carrying something, you may get stuck and drop it off the top of the fire hydrant. We'll get to that perhaps a little bit later. But by rabbinic law, Any area which is neither a Shisarabim nor a Shisayokid is called a Carmelis, and you may not carry in that Carmelis, nor may you carry from the street, from the house to that Carmelis, or from the Carmelis to the house. That's an introduction. So the major issue is, what constitutes a Shisarabim? Why is that relevant? Who cares? We're not giving anybody a carbon chatos or skila. What's the difference if it's a Shisarabim or a Carmelis? The difference is, if it's a Shisarabim, according to the Pesach of the Ramah, if it's a Shisarabim, it's impossible to permit carrying in that area by hanging strings all over from this various side. It's called a Tzuras HaPesach. Won't work. Because Osu Rabim Umavat Mechitzta, I mentioned that last week. But the multitude will come and will knock out the effective because of machitza. Therefore, if it's a Rishusarabim before you hang the string, it will likely remain the Rishusarabim, or at least prohibited to carry, even after you hang up the string. The strings only work if without the string, it's only a status of a carbon. So in order for you to build what we call today colloquially an Eruv, we pointed out last week already that Eruv doesn't mean Eruv. We have a chance to Eruv a little bit later. But what we call colloquially Eruv, the only way it's going to work is that before you ever hung up the first string, it's already considered a Carmelis and not a Shisarabim in HaTorah. Now, why should that be? Why should in any given city or town it be treated as a Shisarabim, as a Carmelis and not a Shisarabim? There are a number of conditions which are necessary for the status of a Shisarabim. One of them is that it has to be 16 amas wide. 16 amas is about 28 feet, something like that. 27 feet. Why? In order to be considered a Shisarabim. The street that is the main street, or whatever street that people are walking through, it's a thoroughfare, has to be 27 feet wide. Not so wide. I think 34 feet is wider. Would you say? I would say, sure. Right. So 34 feet is 16 amas wide. It has to be an area which has no roof. If it has a roof, it's covered, cannot be with just a rabbit. Therefore, it's possible that, I'll give you an example. Here. Way, the northern part of Manhattan, which is under an L, right? Many parts of it, you know Broadway? It goes up, the IRT train goes up, goes out, goes over it. So there wouldn't be a Eruv Shisarabim though, right? Because it's under the L.
Anywhere on the street?
Well, that's what happened to that soon. It has to be what we call the foolish bishar on the shahr. Has to be, but foolish means go straight from one end to the other. More than that, the Ramban says, has to be the foolish umbuchuvon. Shareh umbuchuvon in second negative. That means the two gates are lined up exactly opposite one another. That means, really, has to be a straight line through. A straight line through. If there's no straight line through, then it's not considered to be in the category of Rishus Harabim. I mentioned to you last week that that's an irony. It can come out according to this interpretation, this requirement, I should say, that the bigger the city, we would consider it in our colloquial understanding. The bigger the city, the greater Rishus Harabim it is, right? Big city, big city, big city, Rabim, Rabim, Rabim. The bigger the city, almost the least chance they'll have of being able to shift around. Why? Less likely it's going to go straight. Cities are big, the streets start to curve. And the streets start to curve, according to this opinion quoted by the Ramban, there's no din of Rishus HaRabim. Then comes the unbelievable condition that you have to have 600,000 people in order for it to be Rishus HaRabim. This is a matter of major controversy. Shulchan Aruch quotes two opinions. The custom is quoted by many authorities as being lenient in the matter, even though many Gedolei Rishonim were opposed to it. They've never heard of it. It's not found anywhere in the Gemara. Rashi said it. But Rashi's good enough for me, no? Rashi. Rashi, the Rabbi Gaon. Many Gedolim said this idea of 600,000. Now that we've had gone through these conditions, let's review. If it's going to be uncovered, no roof on top, it can't have three walls around it. The three walls around it, by definition, is called Rishus HaYochid. No three walls around it. Goes through from straight from one end to the other. According to the Ramban and according to Shulchan Aruch, has to be straight, nothing interrupting. And some say it also has to be, you also require 600,000. So you put it all together, are you going to find any city in the whole world, whether you're Rishus HaRabim in HaTorah? I doubt it. Because the last two conditions conflict with each other in a practical sense. You won't find any city that I know of in the whole wide world that has 600,000 people. At the same time, has a street going straight through it, from one end to the other. A city that's so big as to encompass 600,000 people is going to have a curve in all the streets. They say, great, wonderful. You can build it there in every city you want. What could be better? Well, that is the opinion of, seems to me, of most halakhic authorities. You can build an Arab in any city in the whole wide world. And historically, the worst cities in Arab in every city that the Jews dwelled in throughout the world, whenever it was possible. They were always problems of technical sort. The Goyim wouldn't let. But whenever it was possible to build an Arab, they did. So, we have to analyze some of the points that are made by the Gedolim in this regard. And it's interesting that the major fight, worldwide, international, the major fight on airmen in this, we'll call it the post-war period, the last 50 years, have been the two biggest fights that I know about. Halakhic fights, good fights. I don't mean people throw eggs at each other. I mean, halakhic discourse with Svarim written back and forth. The two biggest machlokes that I've known about are Manhattan and Brooklyn. Great, we monopolize the fights here in New York. We have the biggest fights. No one Arab is well known fights about Arab. Every city has an Arab. I don't care how big it is. Tel Aviv has an Arab. Metropolitan Tel Aviv now. You know how big it is? Metropolitan Tel Aviv. But the problem now extends, I think, without interruption. I think if people want air, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, the Yafok, which is the fish's part of the municipality of Tel Aviv. If I'm not mistaken, it's not contiguous with Ramat Gan, which leads takes straight into Bnei Brak, which leads straight into Pesach Tikva, and then the north you have Herzliya, and then Ranana, and Kfar Saba, and the bottom you have Bat Yam and Chulon. I don't know if they have all one big area, but it seems to me that that's called Gush Dan. It's really a city. Who knows better than me? I spent most of my time in Yerushalayim when I was in Israel. But aren't they all basically connected now? There used to be farms between Tel Aviv and Ramat Gan and Petah Tikva. Are there any farms left? I don't think so. I think it's all built up, no? It's all one big. They call it a megalopolis, a megapolis, whatever you want to call it. A big place, right? And there's certainly over 1 million people, it seems to me, and 600,000 people in that area. I'll tell you another secret. I think that already today, when they call Yerushalayim Rabbati, it's in all the headlocks of the fights about building the new yechidot, the new apartments in the so-called territories, etc., right? Greater Yerushalayim. I believe, at least in verify in a minute, the Great Yerushalayim has now more than 600,000 people. Alright? I'm pretty sure. If we include our good cousins, the Arabs are included in this camp. No? Did anybody happen to say the Erev Yerushalayim is now possible? Pretty possible for other reasons, but I haven't heard anybody get up and scream that the Erev Yerushalayim has to stop because we now passed the 600,000 mark. Nor was there too much of an issue about the Arab in Warsaw before the war, nor was there an issue in the Arab in Tel Aviv, but it's accepted. But here in this big apple of ours, that's where the fights. Oh, two tremendous halakhic battles were waged, but I mean tremendous. About 20 years apart. Manhattan and then Brooklyn. Brooklyn was really what they called Flatbush area. Then it's already singles, the people, whoa. So I'm not afraid to talk about it. Scotland and Riverdale, no problem. Well, some of the issues really are the same. Let's start with the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, based on Tzadik HaRav. He was the Gadol Hador, and then his opinion comes first. Whether people agree or disagree, the Gadol Hador is entitled to be heard first. Rav Moshe opposed the Erev of Manhattan in a tshuva written in the 1950s. As follows. Look, I'll give you again a summation, brief summation, but it's important you should know some of the issues here. Everyone's yelling and screaming out of the east side, the west, everyone's yelling. Let us understand what it's all about. Let's stop yelling so much. Moshe was worried about the fact that Manhattan has 600,000 people. No doubt about that. And therefore he claims that all the precedents in Europe are meaningless. Because in Europe he claims, we'll see later how he somehow defended this position. In Europe he said that the cities did not have 600,000 people. The last bit is not true, but Rav Moshe Feinstein, he said it, he'll have a way to explain it. That in Europe, they relied upon the heter, and they did not have 600,000 people. That was their heter. That does not apply in Manhattan to Rav Moshe. And therefore, Manhattan should be an open and shut case, you cannot build an area. However, what complicates Manhattan for Rav Moshe is the fact that Manhattan is a tremendous plus which almost no city in the world has, which is Rhode Island. It's surrounded by walls, almost, and I emphasize the word almost, around its entire perimeter. We said earlier, what's the problem? What's the problem with Hershey's surrounding? It's a big deal. Build a wall around it. Yeah, you're probably right. Only problem is that these strings can't work. Because these strings, we have the principle we said before, what's the principle again? Also Rabim Umavatli Mechitsa. The multitudes come in and knock out the effectiveness of the wall. That doesn't apply to a real wall. No one, you don't have multitudes going over the brink and committing suicide on 34th Street on the east side or the west side. Those walls stand. No one goes over those walls. Ah, but it's a problem. What's the problem? Bridges, puddles, that's the problem. The vast majority of Rav Moshe's children by Manhattan concerns the bridges. What halachic status do these bridges have? So who cares? I don't want to carry the bridge. Who's going to carry the bridge? It's a major problem. Because the bridge comes into the city. The closest bridge here is 59th Street. You ever see it? It's 59th Street Bridge? You're on the bridge, and it's just the car just come right out there on the 2nd Avenue. Boom. There's no wall over there. So if I can't carry on the bridge, then I can't carry on 2nd Avenue, because it's right exposed to the bridge. If I can't carry on 2nd Avenue, guess what? I can't carry on 34th Street or anywhere else in the whole Manhattan. Everything is attached to everything else. Rav Moshe quotes a whole big dispute in the Sefer Erevin, but what he considers to be the halachic status of bridges. Do we say that since the bridge is basically up in the air, just comes in the sky and attaches to the terra firma, to the ground itself in one place, so it's not such a big problem? Or it's not a problem at all, or it's a terrible problem. If it's not a problem at all, it doesn't matter, it's irrelevant. The fact that the bridge is exposed to the so the bridge means nothing. So the bridge is somehow disregarded for whatever reason. If it's a minor problem, it can be fixed up with strings. Just run a string over it. Or the equivalent of a string. Mind you, we don't need a string. But the string we call it Tsuras HaPesa. If you have three poles, which are put up by the city for their reasons, the city, the sign says, I don't know, 59th Street Bridge, trucks, right lane only, whatever it says on top, I don't know what it might say. And there's two poles on the side and a pole on top, and it goes over the ones on the side, like this. That's better than the string. The strings come down. The air queens it down this way. I don't know if anyone comes in from Queens. The air queens it down the shots. I said, oh, no, what do you do then? I got a frantic call from a rabbi in front, what do I do? The air is down. We'll get that if you have a chance. Not today, the next week. But poles usually don't come down. So the pole will be enough if this goes over. String will be enough. But in revelation, if you consider the bridge to be itself a Rishus HaRabim Min HaTorah, because it's somehow considered to be a part of Manhattan, and Manhattan has 600,000 people, and if you consider the bridge to be a part of Manhattan, then it too has a status of Rishus HaRabim. Then in Rav Moshe, the strings won't work, the poles won't work, nothing's going to work. The only which might possibly work to fix up a street which is exposed, which is part of Rishus HaRabim, is what the Gemara calls the losos nu'ulos balayla, which means doors which are closed at night. But the doors are closed at night, thus preventing constant flow of traffic. It's not a 24-hour traffic, because at night the doors are closed. Then, it would not have a status of Rishus HaRabim in HaTorah. Some extended to what we call the losos haru'uyos l'nal balayla, which means doors which are never closed at night, but they're fit to be closed at night. They're capable of being closed at night and stopping the traffic. Rav Moshe is not like this at all. That doesn't really think it's too effective. And since we can't close the bridges at night, so forget it. Relying on the idea of Ruyosinol is very problematic, and plus it was never done. No one has built these doors and the bridges around Manhattan. Therefore, Rav Moshe wasn't sure, is the bridge part of Manhattan, so then it's a disaster, you can't fix it up. Or is it considered not part of Manhattan, so then you can fix it up, and you don't even need to fix it up. He wasn't sure. Then he threw in the clincher. Rav Moshe writes, he thinks you can't make an Erev of Manhattan, even if you surround the place with fences, with walls, with buildings, around and around and around. You know why? He claims, Rav Moshe, not saying sure, but the last paragraph, you can't build an Erev in a big city. Why? Because a big central city, people will see people carrying there, to go back home to their own towns who have no air, and they'll carry there. So that's a very interesting idea. The question is an obvious question. What about Yerushalayim? The answer is obvious. Rabbi Moshe says the air in Yerushalayim is no good. That's all. No problem. The air in Yerushalayim would also be improper, according to Rabbi Moshe. The central city, people will come back and tell us the people to carry it. That's it. Forget about it. This is Rabbi Moshe's opinion as he expresses it. To tell you that Rabbi Moshe's opinion, as far as the last point is concerned, has been utterly rejected by the Jewish people for hundreds of years, would be seen to be superfluous. With every major city that was able to make an Arab made one for the last hundreds of years, including Yerushalayim, which always had an Arab as far back as we remember. If it did not have an Arab in the time of the Gemara, which perhaps is true, it's because they couldn't close the doors at night. It's a whole long story. This is Rav Moshe's opinion. So Rav Moshe was attacked twice. I don't mean attacked, Chas v'Shalom. They personal attack. There were two halakhic responses to Rav Moshe. The first was written as far as the Manhattan era. The Rebbe, I don't understand. You ignore the main point that was written in the Shaila. Namely, there's no street Manhattan that goes straight through. That's what he said. That's one of the conditions that the Shulchan Aruch says. It has to go straight through. Nothing goes straight through. So Rav Moshe, in his classic humility, writes back. This is a one-page shuvah, after a 10-page shuvah. One-page shuvah, Rav Moshe writes back to this person who wrote to him. You're right. I'll tell you you're right. I didn't discuss it. You know why I didn't discuss it? Because I don't understand it. I can't understand where this possibly comes from. Why should we require me to having a street going straight through? It doesn't make any sense to me. So therefore, I didn't even discuss it. But later, Mephrosh said, "We don't understand Rav Moshe Feinstein. Because you don't understand it, so you don't talk about it. Shulchan Aruch says it. If you let it, you don't understand it." What Rav Moshe probably meant was, and we'll get to it a little later, that because he doesn't understand it, so maybe it means something a little bit different than meets the eye, and therefore he didn't want to apply it. That's how I read the Shulchan Aruch question. I think later history bore me out. We'll see. It's all written in the very first volume of Rav Moshe's Shuvahs, written in the 50s yet, Or Chaim Aleph. How the Gedolei Torah says an Erev Manhattan is possible, it's advisable, people are carrying anyway. Just now this past Shabbos in Shul, we were learning about Bishul the Shabbos. Oh, P.S. Before I was in the class last term, we talked a little bit about crockpots. Someone walks to my room just yesterday. I kid you not, in my little office in the yeshiva uptown, says to me, the latest, just hot off the press room, from Shloimeh Zalman Arabach Aser, two-piece crockpots. Came in a fax from Michlala, straight. I said, Rabbi Pollack, I asked this person. Thinks from a different rabbi who teaches halacha. Who could that possibly be? I always go on my apologies, I love people's houses in Mechorah. So I thought, I don't know who the Rebbe is who told it to the student, but this young lady faxed the father. Boom. I said, so then I called the father, who was a rabbi in principal of a very major school in New York City, and I called, he called me back yesterday late afternoon. I said, what's this? He said, yup, he got the fax. And he doesn't know exactly, but he thinks that has something to do with Hatzmona. Ooh. You may recall last term I said to you that the two-piece crockpot, I have a reservation that maybe it should be considered Hatzmona because it's surrounded on five sides at the bottom and all the sides. Even though the top is open, it's not so simple that there are more leniency applied to such a case. But I said, I can't, because who am I? People are doing it. P.S. I gotta get the final facts, but that's what I was told that Shlomo Zalman got a new chumrah. I said, but I never heard this before. Yeah, of course not. He said, the chumrah of the week. It just happened now. So, we're still getting, details are sketchy, as they say. We're still trying to find out what happened. But I got a report just yesterday. So we'll see. Tune in next week. If you hear something about it over Shabbos, Let me know. If I ask, I'll let you know. How did I get onto this? Because in my shul, the Shabbos, someone was telling me, he grew up in the Lower East Side. There's a man who's going to say 60 years old, approximately. He grew up in the Lower East Side 40 years ago. In the Lower East Side, 40, 50 years ago. He remembers that people carried in the streets of the Lower East Side, the cholas, to the bakery, to the house, to the kiddush, with no eruv. With no eruv. So I responded to him that that's exactly why, it seems to me, as a rabbanim, should build an eruv. When it's at all possible, because people are carrying even when they don't have an eruv. And I recounted to him what I was told in the name of one of the very great rabbanim of Yerushalayim, Eilech HaRegdus, who said, years ago, the people, the Balabat, the Eilech HaRegdus, that's the Turekata groups, the Badat, that kind of group, said to their rabbanim, listen rabbis, Eruv or no Eruv, we're carrying. You better build an Eruv. It's halakhic blackmail. We're going to carry anyway. If you don't build it, it'll be on your head. That's what I heard the story when I was Yerushalayim 2 years ago. So, for this reason, when I came to my community in Riverdale, there was no Eruv, and people were carrying. Alright, my shul is a quote-unquote from shul, so people weren't carrying explicitly, they weren't carrying there. But people I saw, we'll get to it later, what you're not supposed to do, they had handkerchiefs in the way, and keys, and combs, and all kinds of things that were not done properly. I said to myself, if someone doesn't want to use the Eruv, he doesn't have to use the Eruv, but I don't want it on my head. That they carried it's the rabbi's fault, they didn't build an Eruv. So I was involved, together with my rabbinic colleagues in the community, in building an Eruv. Those who don't want to use the Eruv, fine. Don't be wrong, you don't have to use the Eruv. My Rebbe was against all Eruv, basically. So the nation was against Eruv. And out of deference, I also don't try very hard not to use the Eruv, which I built. I can't tell how many hours I put into that. But you know, my Rebbe was opposed to it. Other Gedolim are opposed to it for various reasons. So we manage without it. But that's me. I want to be for the whole community. How can I be so strict to the whole community? Then they're going to carry it anyway, and they'll come and they'll ultimately blame the rope. Why didn't you build an Eruv? Yes?
Isn't there still a problem where even though you build an Eruv, people are going to carry it anyway? Don't they have to have, not certain intention, but you're only supposed to carry it because you necessarily need?
No. Once the Eruv is up, carrying in the streets like carrying in your house. You shouldn't carry in your house, you don't need it either, but you don't have to be sitting 5 minutes and think, do I need this? Whatever normal.
The rub might be a very small community, and everybody carries, just nobody to carry from, and he's just saying that he was going to build one because they're not going to realize the Holocaust involved with an Eruv, and they're different.
You're right. You know, people think the Eruv is not everything. When I was once boys in my sheets to make a joke that they think of every violation in the world and say, well, it's an Eruv. I said, he's driving his car. Eruv. He's not making that made a joke out of it, you know. But you're right, it's not a joke. People think an Eruv is you're 100% right. But we built our Eruv, I think I saw about last week. No, I played ball in town. Yeah, terrible. Now part of the fun and games cheer from last week. Yeah, you're right. I believe there's one community where the rabbi insists that every single year, 1 week, the Eruv is down. Not really, he announced that it's down. Just in order people should know how to live without an Eruv. That's what I was told. Let's go back to the point at hand. So the Gedolei Torah felt that, what do you mean you can't make an Eruv in a big city? They always made Eruv in a big city. And what do you mean you don't understand that the cities the streets have to be straight? But this says in Shulchan Aruch, have to be straight. So they said to Rav Moshe, they didn't like what Rav Moshe had to say. It's true, however, that Rav Baruch Kotler, Zeva Tzadik Levracha, also printed a tshuva, printed after long after he passed away, but he said it at the time, against the Eruv in, not quite in Manhattan, but against Eruv in large cities, based upon this lack of streets going straight. He didn't go for it in a big way. But the problem is, what are you going to do? The Shulchan Aruch says so. How can you go against the Shulchan Aruch after the streets going straight? So, yeah. There was enough to, it just was sort of left hanging. That was how it was left for 20 years. Until came the big one. Like an earthquake every 20 years, the big one. So what happened? It was a so-called Erev in Manhattan. People, some people relied and some people didn't rely upon it. And this was, Matzah continued for 20 years, from the late 50s to the late 70s. And that's it, an Erev. So most Manhattanites, I would say, from what I understood, did not rely upon the Erev. And then some did. Okay. Came along at the next thing. So I want to tell you a little secret. You know, we live now, everyone's growing up in Erevin. There were no Erevin in New York City. Even 20 years ago, 25 years ago, there was no such thing. 25 years ago, there was not an Erev to be seen in New York, except the one in Manhattan, which people didn't rely on. They didn't build anything. They just said, they just declared one day, there's an Erev. They drove around, they saw the water on all sides of the island. There's an Erev, boom. But building Erevin was unheard of. The first area that I know about I'm not talking about Seagate. Seagate always had it. Seagate is surrounded by a fence. I'm not talking about Seagate. There was no area. No one ever built an area. The first area that was built that I know about in New York City, correct me if you think I'm wrong, was Staten Island. Staten Island was built, I think, even in the very late 60s. Or maybe very early 70s. I'm not sure. I think maybe very late 60s. And part of the reason was Staten Island, then especially, was just the Verrazano was either just hadn't been up yet, it was just built, it was far away from everything. They built an area. Staten Island was those, now it's Main Street, but those days were still considered far out. You couldn't bring any rights from Staten Island to other parts of the city. They wanted to become part of New Jersey now, or whatever they wanted to succeed. But the first major break, it was really a major, incredible breakthrough in Erevin came in my hometown, Kew Garden Hills. Yes. That was the first real breakthrough. Of course, when I was young, it didn't exist, you know. After I got married, then they started to build an Erevin in Kew Garden Hills. It was sometime in the 70s, I think it was about 72 or 3, 4, that's around that time. You can look it up with the Tshuva of Moshe Feinstein wrote about the Kew Garden Hills Erevin. Obviously, it's not the first Bible that came out in the 50s, it's the last Bible, if I'm not mistaken. I believe. I don't know. One of the Bibles. He writes a Tshuva written to Rabbi Peretz Steinberg. Rabbi, the very distinguished rabbi of Israel of Queens Valley. And he writes a one-page Tshuva that the air of the Kew Garden Hills is a good thing, or a bunch of was taken around the air. It's wonderful, it's fantastic, it's terrific. That doesn't do with Manhattan, which we said is not allowed. This is a small town, yeah. And therefore, it's a good thing to build an area. Hot time. Once Kew Garden Hills broke the ice, following Staten Island, which is a little bit out of the way, now it's not, but once that breakthrough was made, then every other neighborhood started to want to build an area. But hey, the young couples want to have their baby carriages going. I mean, oh, people don't forget, this is around the same, let's notice sociology. This is around the same time when people started going en masse and trips to Eretz Yisrael. In America, the 40s, 50s, 60s, who went to Eretz Yisrael? Nobody. No, people didn't go. People didn't go to Eretz Yisrael. I know my parents came to Eretz Yisrael the first time in 1967, because I was there, the students. They came to see me, and I had elderly parents there, my father had, so that's, no one. Even the biggest Zionists, no, people just didn't travel. It wasn't like today. Started coming there in the late 60s, yeah, it was an Yerushalayim. I carried there, tell them I carried there, as a neighbor I carried there. Why can't I carry in Brooklyn? From the Queens, man, what's going on here? So it was a little bit of pressure. Kew Garden Hills made the Erev, that was it. Every rabbi in every town was on notice, Erev or else. E-O-E. So, different things happened. They built an Erev in Forest Hills, they built an Erev in Hillcrest, they built an Erev in Kew Garden Hills, they built an Erev in Briarwood, they built an Erev in Kew Gardens. They built an Erev later in the spread in five towns in Far Rockaway. They built in the West Hempstead, I think. They built in all the Erev Queens, not in Long Island. We built one in Riverdale in the mid-70s. It was Casada, we had Erev. It was never a problem. There was never much of a real fight. Not much. There were some objectors, but not too many. to these areas. Now the pressure shifted to flat. If every dinky neighbor can have an error, why can't we, the established neighbor of Flatbush, here at Kodesh, why can't we have an error? Well, Flatbush, in contrast to the other air neighbors that I mentioned, had a very strong and burgeoning and growing and developing, and now it's overpowering, what we call today Haredi community. This did not exist in any of the neighborhoods I mentioned, with the possible exception of Far Rockaway. In Far Rockaway, in fact, there was a bit of a dispute about the area. We had a tremendous fire about the area a few years ago. That was terrible. But then when it was originally built, it was built. Some people didn't use it. There wasn't such a big fight. Flatbush was an all-out war. Literally, I have no other way to describe what happened there. And of course, the top of it was that the Rabbanim went to Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe said, no, you can't build an Erev in Flatbush. They built it anyway. That was Lo Yafeh. That was Lo Yafeh. If you want to go to a Rav and build an Erev, so go to a build an Erev. You go to Rav Moshe, you ask him, he says, no, you build it anyway. That was really, seems to me, a violation of rabbinical protocol. Rav Moshe was the Gadol HaDor at the time, there's no question about it. You would find 10 of the Gadolim who would be mocked as the Erev in a flesh, and if you go to them, it might be a bit insulting to Rav Moshe who's sitting here living in New York, you want to run to Yerushalayim, that would be a small affront. But to ask him, he says, no, I'm building anyway. So look, there were various rumors going there, Rav Moshe approved the Erev. So Rav Moshe came out with his famous, world-famous tshuva, which he writes that if they wouldn't have quoted me, they'd say, I approved the Erev in Flatbush, I might have said nothing. Now they quoted me and I approved it, when in fact I didn't, I have to come out and say why I don't approve it, why I don't like it. But a long tshuva is printed in the last volume of Rav Moshe on Aruch Chaim, volume 4 Aruch Chaim, which came out in the 80s. How good had it come out? What was Rav Moshe's response to the streets? Straight Street Syndrome and the 600,000 that they did in Warsaw. So the truth had to come out. So the truth came out, and actually before Rav Moshe's say was ever printed, it was by Rav Moshe himself, and it was Moshe, it was already printed earlier by two Rabbanim, who wrote beautiful, beautiful pamphlets about the same time, what we say in Yiddish, fire and vasa. Fire and water. They were just absolutely against each other, but in the biggest possible way. One was written by a man named, a very famous rabbi named Rabbi Menashe Klein from Borough Park. Rabbi Menashe Klein printed Rabbi Moshe's tshuva against the Erev in Brooklyn and wrote that. That took up, let's say, this book, 10 pages, Rabbi Menashe Klein. He wrote 100 pages attacking, responding. That's what tremendous Erev Eretz for Rabbi Moshe. For responding to what Rav Moshe said. He came up with 11 or 12 different reasons why the Erev should be possible to make, why it should be good. Why it shouldn't be, which is a rabbi d'oraisa. That's in the one hand. On the other hand, came out a beautiful, beautiful kuntzes written by a man named Rabbi Weissman. Rabbi Weissman, his name is Rabbi. I think Rav Moshe Weiss, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm not mistaken, this is off the record, I'm off the tape, but I don't know if you won't mind. He officially wrote the Medrash Tetz. But in reality, you don't know the secret about that book? No one knows the secret? You read the Medrash Tetz, an immensely popular series? You know who really wrote it? His wife. But they thought it wouldn't sell I'm not kidding. I'm quite sure that's true. But that's just an aside. That's nothing to do with the Erev. I really shouldn't confuse the issues. He wrote a beautiful kuntres called, Rabbi Menashe Klein, the thing was called Omani Chomo, with a play on words. Omani Chomo, the Chomo wall. And Rabbi Weiss wrote a statement called Yitzias HaShabbos, a whole kuntres in which he prints Rav Moshe Tshuva, elaborates upon it, and explains why the Erev is absolutely no good. And he actually printed in the back a big called Kerei, came out in Flatbush at that time, with called Kerei means big letters, don't you dare carry a chul Shabbos or Raisa, by by 20 Rabbanim who live in Tzlapa Shuma at the time. This is what I call an Achlokas Hashem Shemayim. He was trying to advance his halachic position back and forth, to and fro, as long as people don't fight with each other. I mean, you know, call each other names, that's not right. You say, in my opinion, it's not permitted to use the Erev. That's fine. My opinion, it is. It's also fine. Just don't kill each other. So what were the real issues in here? So the main issue, it turned out, concerning the story of the straight streets, had to do with the following. Rabbi Weissman writes there, and that quote, the Rabbi Moshe makes an allusion to it, not so much Barichas. And Rabbi Weissman quoted them from Rabbi Aaron Cutler's as yet unpublished Shuvah, which has since been published too. Both Rabbi Moshe and Rabbi Aaron came out after his Kuntras. That perhaps the only time you need straight streets is if, listen carefully now, if the city is surrounded by a wall. If the city is surrounded by a wall, then you need straight streets. If the city is not surrounded by a wall, you don't. And you shouldn't think it was made up out of the clear blue sky. There are two different versions of Rashi. Rashi is the source of this whole din. You know, everything hangs on a word. It's the word O, Aleph Vav, which is in parentheses. And the whole dispute hinges on whether that O belongs or doesn't belong. You have to have great streets or not surrounded by a wall, or you have to have straight streets and not surrounded by a wall. Something like that. Yes?
Straight streets means that you should surround it, right? Okay, so I don't understand what you're saying. If this could be surrounded by a wall, you need straight streets and it's looking at it?
No, sorry. If surrounded by a wall, then the only way for it to be which is surrounded by Raisa is if the streets are straight. If it's not surrounded by a wall, these people say, even if the streets are not straight, it's still a Rishon Tzoraav and Daraisa. So therefore, instead of saying the Ramban is simply wrong, right? The Ramban is the Ramban is in effect in the first. The Ramban is wrong. I can say the Ramban is wrong. He said he needs straight streets. It's not wrong. Chas v'shalom. He's right. But he's only right if there's a wall around the city. There's no wall around Flatbush. Yeah.
So you're saying if the city is surrounded by a wall and he needs straight streets, and there are straight streets,
then you can't build an area with streets. That's what these Gedolim said. Because it's Slavish, has no wall, so therefore it can be Rishon Tzoraav without straight streets. That's what they said. Now. This, of course, calls into question the very source of the straight street. What's it based upon? Why these straight streets in the first place? Ramban said that. What's it based upon? So it seems to me that there are two separate ways to explain the requirement of straight streets. One is derived from the encampment in the desert, Diglei Midbar, which had straight streets. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam was a master planner. When he pulled out the encampment in the desert, it was straight streets right through. Perfect lines. That's the case. Let me answer a question. Was there a wall around the Jewish people in the desert? Yes or no? I would say the answer is definitely no. There was no wall. And since you required straight streets in the desert, that's the whole source for it. So you see clearly that requirement for straight streets exists even if there is no wall. So Isha Feinstein writes back, well, there were the Anane HaKovo. There were the clouds of glory. Others say, come on. Clouds of glory? That's metaphysical. That's not a wall. And they prove it. That's why I'm the best proof. If the clouds of glory are a wall, then the clouds of glory should be a ceiling. As we said before, if there's a ceiling, then it's not a shatran no matter what. That was our first condition. If it's under the L, under the ceiling. So how can you take into account the clouds of glory? And then they had covered. Till they point. Very difficult opinion to take into account that Ananiah covered in this regard. It seems, therefore, if you're going to derive it from the Diglei Midbar, then the rule should apply wall or no wall. That's what I think. And you know what? This Rabbi Weissman, as much as he's trying to attack the Arab and Flatbush, just about concedes this point. Just about. I don't remember what he said exactly. Just about. But he then comes up with a new idea. A new idea, which I thought had a measure of validity. He says, no. The requirement for straight streets is not what we call a halakha l'moshe m'Sinai or some derivation which has no logic to it, just based upon the encampment in the desert. If it was based upon that, then in fact they would have to apply it if there's no wall, because there was no wall in the desert. Rather, it's based upon logic. It's based upon logic. If streets don't go straight and there's a wall around the city, then every part of the city will in effect be surrounded by three walls. I don't have any chalk. It's hard for me to draw it. It's chalk easily. Wait a minute, is that chalk? If you can find some chalk, it'll be easy. Thank you very much. Thank you. Let's go. It's enough to have two walls, not only three. The house in Yerushalayim, you should surround the Oraisa. It's always surrounded by two walls. So it says, no, this. Let's say all the streets are curved. So like this. I can't draw all the streets. It's crazy. I'll just draw one street. And here's one opening. So this here's just draw out, see what you get out. It's not take a point over here. Uh-oh, dangerous. I can draw it over here and go right out of the city, right? Now draw three other ways. Wall, wall, wall. What's the matter? Three sides by walls? I don't get it.
What do you define by wall?
Two have to draw your bigger. Take this point. Alright, this is an enlargement of this area. Just draw out, see where you're at. Stop taking points over here. Uh-oh, dangerous. I can draw it over here and get, go right out of the city, right? Now draw three other ways. Wall, wall, wall. What's the matter? Three stars by walls? I don't get it.
What do you define by wall?
Two have to draw your bigger. Take this point. Alright? This is an enlargement of this area. Having a map, you know? So now, you run into three walls. You go this way, you hit a wall. You go this way, you hit a wall. You go this way, you hit a wall. Only here you go out and hit no wall. So every area is going to be surrounded by, every point will be surrounded by three walls. Surrounded by three walls, says Rabbi Weissman, it can't be Rishon Sarab and Atar because it's surrounded by three walls. But that's only true if there's a wall around the entire city. So if there's no wall around the entire city, he claims it's not required to have straight streets. In other words, I'll give you another example, okay? There's no wall around the city. No wall. Just imagine you have, bad drawing. It's very important. It's critical to the argument. But they have very wide streets and very relatively small houses or clusters of houses. So you have some houses here, some houses here, and a big street in between. Then I'll write smack in the middle, I'm going to put houses here. I'm going to say it goes straight out, put a house over here. I'll put another house over here. That's it, that's the whole city. Well, the other way around, I'll have to put a house over here. Another house over here. Another house over here. So there's no way to get straight through. Just can't be great, right? I can't go here, I'm gonna bump into this, I'll bump into this, 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 and this. And this I'll bump into this, 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 this. Can't, this is it. This is it. Nobody go through it, no, go straight through it. Can't? Alright? So he writes, that doesn't make a difference. It's a Rishon Sarabim anyway. Why is it a Rishon Sarabim anyway? Because look, although it's true you can't go straight through, so what? If I take this piece over here, it's in effect exposed on three sides. Why three sides? One, two, right? Exposed to the outside world. It's open, not surrounded. What about this one and this one? This is in the way. Nah, this is nothing. Although there happens to be a wall over here, but this is just a little wall of 10 feet out of 100 feet that the city is, 70 feet that the city is across. So therefore, it's considered irrelevant, because when it comes to the laws of Erev, it's very important to realize we follow the majority. If the wall is enclosed, the majority is considered enclosed completely. If not, then not. If you have a wall, the wall is enclosed in the majority. So the only way to find it, which is surrounded by Torah, is that you can go straight through. If you go straight through, so it's exposed on both sides, and presumably the wall is somehow set aside, and it's Rishon Sarabim in HaTorah. Because it's flat, which has no wall around it, so therefore, even though the streets don't go straight through, it could be Rishon Sarabim in HaTorah. This is what was argued at the time. There are two problems with this argument, in my opinion. One is the fact they're wrong, that Flatbush is surrounded by a wall. Three sides. Majority. I said majority was determined. We're in Flatbush and wall. Well, don't stop at Flatbush. Have you ever seen a map of Brooklyn? Anybody? So, you go due south of this hallowed institution, and you hit the East River, you cross over, you see something called the BQE, right, the other side of the, right? And that runs along the boundary of the, what you call, I guess, the beginning of the East River, as it comes, and there's a wall straight along, it's not just fall into the river. That's due north of Flatbush. Due north of Flatbush, you'll see a wall that goes all the way to Brooklyn Navy Yard, to Williamsburg. There's a wall. Now turn, as you're coming there from Williamsburg towards the Brooklyn Battery. That doesn't mean Big apple. You have to learn the geography of the city in which you not live, at least to here most of the year. You don't know the geography. You come to the Battery, make a left. Right? You hit the Gowanus, the Belt, all that stuff. Guess what? You're driving the Belt Parkway, there's a wall. You shouldn't fall into the Hudson River. Now you go and make, go to Coney Island and make a left turn. And now you're like you're passing Coney Island, Brighton Beach, whatever else is out there, Sheepshead Bay, I don't know what's way down at the very end. Guess what? There's again a wall. Either by the Belt Parkway there's a wall, or later on there's a wall near the boardwalk. There are walls covering most of it. That's number one. But there are walls, in fact, around the majority of Brooklyn, of that part of Brooklyn. But aside from that, forget the walls. Who said you have to have a wall around the entire city? It seems to me that today, the biggest street in Flatbush, Ocean Parkway, right? That's a big street. Ocean Parkway, ever been to Ocean Parkway? Big, beautiful street. Ocean Parkway, nothing like this. Ocean Parkway is like this, let me give you a different drawing. What I'm trying to get at is that the buildings on the side are, I would say, 90% of Ocean Parkway, and the streets going through, you know, what do you call it? Then we'll call it Avenue, just for argument's sake, Avenue J, K, L, M, N, that's 10%. You ever see this line by building, there are very few gaps. Big buildings, apartment houses, yeshivas. So many times, so many yeshivas in the Ocean Parkway. What? So therefore, that itself might constitute, in effect, a wall on two sides. Ah, but the question is, does Ocean Parkway go straight through? The answer is no. Ocean Parkway is not straight. It looks straight, it's straight, it's almost straight. I remember once in the heat of this battle, when this fight was raging, and it must have been, about 13, 14 years ago, maybe around that time, I took my children on a trip to the aquarium. Have you ever been in the aquarium? Coney Island Aquarium. And then I had my eyes open because I already heard, is Ocean Park, what happened at the end of Ocean Park? What happened exactly? Sure enough, I came, A-J-K-L-M, and all of a sudden I got to Avenue V, I think it was. And that's not going to be what happened. Boom. She went up like this. And at the end, so it came to an end by the aquarium. It didn't go straight through. It curved significantly, maybe it's a little exaggeration, but it did make a significant curve. And then it sort of had a fence at the end of it. Yeah, all traffic got to go to the right. It seems to me, therefore, that it's arguable that Ocean Parkway itself is surrounded by three walls. You know, when it came to Manhattan, the whole tremendous fight out there in the late 50s, well, in the 60s, they built the Cross Bronx Expressway. Anyone know about that? That's to try to help destroy the Jewish community of the Bronx, among other things. And they built what they call now the Alexander Hamilton Bridge. Here on the radio all the time, like this traffic. Cut straight through to the George Washington Bridge. So remember at the time, people started yelling, oh, you see there's a street that goes straight across Manhattan. That's very narrow at 179. It goes straight across Manhattan. P.S. It's not true. I go there every day. It's not true. It takes a curve. I already forgot which way. I think it goes this way. Curves a bit. Here's the Harlem River, and here's the Hudson River. It curves. How significant must the curve be? It curves enough, you can't draw a line straight through. If you start here, you can't draw straight through. So therefore, it seems to me that even if you assume that the requirement of straight streets only applies when you have a wall around it, there is a wall around it. Either there's a wall around the entire Brooklyn, there's even a wall around Ocean Parkway because it's lined by street, by buildings, the majority. And then the street's not straight. The only way, therefore, you can have a Rishon LeZion d'oraisa, according to my understanding, is just a sprawling city. But the gaps are bigger than the buildings. tell you a secret. When they wanted to have a big Erev in Los Angeles, a big fight ensued. And they were measuring on Wilshire Boulevard how many people are going. And then there was a whole discussion for those who were in the know, is Wilshire Boulevard more buildings or more spaces? Because in L.A., not like New York, L.A. is Oyskish break, you know, spread out, big gaps all over the place. And if there would be, I don't think it's true, but if there would be more openings than buildings on Wilshire, I don't think it's true. I think there are more buildings than openings, although not 90 to 10, so it's 60 to 40, then it would be a serious problem, even because of misunderstanding concerning Rishus Rav Dorayis. Yes? It does. It's Brooklyn Bridge. Right, it does. But, let me think about it for a minute. It does, no question it does. But as I said to you before, the bridge problem itself is... Rav Moshe himself was the one who raised the bridge problem, wrote in a subsequent tshuva. It's one of those postscripts of history. Something which, you know, when you read a tshuva of a great man, there's always these little flukes that creep in which are wrong. You know, it's not that he didn't. It's an amazing tshuva. Rav Moshe wrote his tshuva sefer in the 80s, and he wrote two tshuvas in the sefer. One about the Arab in Manhattan, and I think two about the Arab in Brooklyn. That's the last volume. And some people had was afraid, because Rav Moshe was a little bit liberal on the Arab in Manhattan, said, you want to make it, you can make it. I'm not so opposed to it. It might be misconstrued. He was liberal on the Arab in Brooklyn, too. So the very back of the tshuva, the last page, is a postscript from Rav Moshe. And it says, look at the Hashemot in the back. That which I wrote, he writes there, to Arav Elio Yong Zal. About Leo Yong, the famous rabbi of the Jewish sense, Zal. It means a blessed memory. P.S. He was alive at the time. So it's one of those flukes that creeps into a sage. He wrote that Leo is on Zal. That the eight. I'm just telling you, I wasn't done with malice. It just was a print. It was a last minute edition, obviously. It was something I had to print it and realize, whatever. So he wrote there, that which I wrote, that the Arab of Manhattan has a basis. Don't think it applies to Brooklyn. Because Manhattan has walls all around it, and Brooklyn does not. Rav Moshe did not go for those walls in Brooklyn. He didn't. I know somebody who volunteered to drive Rav Moshe around and show him the walls. He didn't want to go. He didn't even meant real walls. Not this highway. He didn't like it so much. For whatever reason. Yes?
What constitutes a wall like that?
Anything which is 3 feet high, which encompasses the majority of the direction, that seems to be the constitute a wall.
It
was like, for whatever reason, I don't know. He was afraid of the wall. There were holes in it. If you go through it, then even though it's a majority, I know what he is. Rav Moshe did not believe in majority rule in this respect. He writes so. The fact that the majority enclosed doesn't help. So in Manhattan, it's completely enclosed except for the bridges. But if Brooklyn was only a majority, at least on the south side of Brooklyn, on the north and the west side of Brooklyn, I think the walls are complete. I think. But in the south side, I went through it when I was there by the boardwalks and by the beach. It wasn't a totality. Rav Moshe was consistent throughout. He didn't do it. But now came the biggest question against Rav Moshe. What do you do with Warsaw? They built an Arab in Warsaw. And you know, here's an irony. I don't know if Rav Moshe was aware of this. The rabbi in Warsaw was asked this question 60 years ago. How do you have an Arab in Warsaw? Chutzpah. There's 3 million people here. You know what he answered? We don't have straight streets. That's what he answered. The Varsha Rav, Kahana was his name. Rav Moshe didn't know about it or felt he was wrong. He didn't know why an Arab was good. You know, Rav Moshe writes the most incredible idea. Rav Moshe writes that in Warsaw, although there were 600,000 people for sure, they weren't to be found within the requisite space of what's called 12 mils by 12 mil. In the desert, the Jews were within 12 mil by 12 mil, some other by miracle, I don't know how. They had 600,000 people within 12 mil by 12 mil. But Moshe writes that Warsaw, they didn't have it. It was much more spread out. Well, that's true or not, I can't tell you. But in Brooklyn, with all the big apartment houses, it's not so spread out, so therefore you can have the 600,000 even within the 12 mil by 12 mil. That's what distinguishes Brooklyn and Manhattan on the one hand from Warsaw on the other hand. That's Rav Moshe's secret. That defends his position against why should be different than Warsaw. So there are two problems with that. Number one is a tremendous chiddush. Rav Moshe himself has no one ever said this before me, ever. That it should be required to do within a certain range. And two, that's not what the rabbi in Warsaw said. Well, we was revisionist history within the Warsaw, they rely on something which they never heard of. So therefore, it seems to me that this is still a very open question, whether the Erev is valid, and an Erev can be made in Brooklyn or cannot be made in Brooklyn in Flatbush. It seems to me that the majority of authorities in Erev could be made in Flatbush. But for some reason, the people in Flatbush have a big fuss against it, and now most people don't carry in Flatbush Erev. The same kinds of Jews who carry in Yerushalayim Erev, same types, whether they be Yeshivish or Hasidish or whatever they may be, don't carry in the Brooklyn, in the Flatbush Erev. Why that is, either because of Moshe, Gadol Hador had a different opinion than the Gadol of Yerushalayim had, or for other reasons which I don't want to go into right now. But that's just the way it is. Yes. I'm not so sure. Oh. Why I mention this to you now is now a new era called the West Side era. So let me give you a little bit of background. Some years ago, it came somehow to the attention of some rabbonim in Manhattan that the emperor has no clothes. He was no heir in Manhattan. Not because of all the loveliness which we discussed. Now, forgive me, I was a little bit over theoretical. You got plenty of practical, but I want to explain to you that there are issues involved. So, whenever in your lifetime, I'm sure you'll be sitting on a table and someone's screaming, "The heir is good. It's no good. You can't make an heir." Kind of. Wait a minute. I learned a class, and it's very complicated. Don't make some simplistic statements. That's my goal over here. You should spend a little bit of time. It's worth it, but you know it's not so simple. But the emperor had no clothes meant there was no wall around Manhattan. 90%, 95% did have a wall, but not the whole thing. I have to say that I had a little bit of involvement in this discovery as well. It's not that I was looking for trouble, but I happened to drive every day across the little river from the Bronx to Manhattan. And you can see from that river right across to the northern tip of Manhattan. And I have to say, what is it? It's a flat beach? There's a flat beach in the northern tip of Manhattan. I said, what kind of machitza? There is no machitza here. There's no wall. You may not need a wall if you have an embankment. There was no embankment. There was simply nothing there. So one of the rabbis in the major shul in Manhattan called me up. Somehow already I must have told someone in the yeshiva the problem. You know how word gets around. It's like the facts with the crack pot. The word got around that there's nothing there. The rabbi called and said, "Yeah, thank you. Put him in my car. We drove him from where you drove from a few from a mile north to, you know, near Bakerfield, you know, where from now the Allen Pavilion of the Confederate right area. To the west of the Broadway Bridge, the Broadway Bridge and the Henry Hudson Bridge. Flat. Walk right up to the water. Nothing there." I said, "Where's your area? Forget the problem of hanging, but there's nothing there." This got a whole tunnel. Then they hired out a boat with a video camera, went around the entire Manhattan looking for problems, and they found quite a few. And since we're on tape, I will not mention names, but a very fine rogue, involved in the time of a very significant shul here in Manhattan, took this videotape to one of the original rabbis who was involved in the pseudo-Erev, so-called Erev, in the 50s and 60s, and said, "If you can find," this is his word, "if you can find an Erev around this island, I'll eat the tape. I'll eat my hat, but I'll eat it." And they played the tape, and they couldn't find it. It was Garcia, Garcia. So then with our effort, which I was involved in as well, a little bit, informally, try to fix up the Erev around the entire island of Manhattan. What they did was, they drew a street across what they called Dyken Street, like 200 Street. extreme from one end to the other. So there are not so many Jews living north of that. This way they just cut out the whole north piece and it was regular streams. And there's a problem on 16th Street, a problem on 21st Street, a problem here, a problem there. And like some problems with bridges and tunnels were really very hard, I don't know if they ever solved them. They made it a little bit better. But still it was not, even after these improvements, it's still very weak, relying on many leading streets. Hardly questionable. Aside from the general, can you make an error? There is no error. Now there's much more than there used to be. I don't know exactly what it's really up to the standards that are being used throughout the world in errors. I don't know. What happened was then, as the history progresses, Rabbi Berman, remember the faculty here, right? Rabbi Saul Berman, correct? He became the rabbi of the Lincoln Square Synagogue. And of course, many people were not sure who was in the air, and he was not happy. Not happy. I don't even know. A, he probably heard about these rumblings that there really is no air, but B, he was concerned about the air of the Catholic people. And we're going to make our own air around the West Side. Ooh. Okay, we'll try to make it good. So two things happened. One, they tried to make it around the West Side. It was supposed to go in a year or two. I think it took, it was just finished, officially finished now, in Kippur time. And it was started, I remember Roman Towns from Lincoln Square. It was really out of Lincoln Square for a few years. 10 years or more? When did Towns move? What are they risking on all of that? 10 years ago? More. 12, 15, whatever, a long time ago. That's when they started working on it. It went on and on and ups and downs. The government made it crazy. You can't put a pole in. Yeah, that's crazy. But they also had another thing. They also made themselves their own problems. They decided they're going to build glossos, these doors. And every time you can go out of the air from the West Side, they're going to put in a door. You see any doors? You go to the West Side, you see any doors? Look again, you'll see them. They're not doors. You look on the light poles. It's very obvious where to find it. Everyone knows that the Arab goes to Central Park West, the West Side. You know, they can actually walk to Central Park West. Where any of the transfers go, whatever, 5th Street, 9th Street, everything. You look and you see little kinds of boxes, like little tubes, attached to one side or the other of the regular light poles. Those are doors. You know, you can see it also, it's right in front of the shul. They had it, I think it's still there. When they're trying to show the balabata what the door looks like, they had it. We put it on the light pole right in front of the shul, make it square. Right, it's still there. It's there for years. And you can pull it, it's locked. But you can unlock it, you can take a netting and pull it across and attach it on the other side. So in theory at least, the door can be drawn to close the street. Now they never close the street, mind you. They're supposed to close it once a year. I don't believe it, even that's been done. But alright, some authorities say it's a delus, which is Ru'uyo Lino. I told you before that I think that's no good. I think you may not need it. But that's the time that went into this area. Tens of thousands of dollars that was finally just completed now. Even now that it's completed, so you know how it is. How can you make an Arab in Tulsa? How can you make an Arab in a half? You can't do it. You can't do it. They're not out of the woods, but at least they made the Arab certainly a significant improvement. All this discussion is critical to know because unfortunately people fight about these things. I'm reiterating it again. And I feel that people shouldn't fight. If you don't like the air, for whatever reason, because your rabbi doesn't like it, or you know enough not to like it yourself, so just don't use it. Don't have to throw stones. Don't use it. And, if I may, if a rabbi doesn't like the air, well, then if he thinks an Arab cannot be made in that location, you can't. So you can just say his opinion. Nicely and quietly, I mean, without making such a tumult. If you can fix up the particulars of the Arab, to fix it. Don't say, well, this guy's Arab is no good. Just fix it up. That's an unfortunate problem in Farakla. They don't know if it's not Arab. It's a terrible, terrible dispute there also. A certain rabbi had been involved in the Arab. Another rabbi came in and didn't like it. So, see, I think here the further event is somewhat of a strategical error. He was told, hey, want to fix this. Instead of saying, okay, so fix it. That's what I would say. Fix it, go ahead, I'm not opposed. Make it better. He sort of said, what do you mean? It's a good way it is now, I don't need to fix anything. So it became a terrible problem. It's a very unfortunate result. So I feel Airmen should be built whenever it's plausible and feasible, whenever it's halakhically possible. Those that don't want to use it should not use it. And those that do want to use it should use it. Okay. That's too much time on this. I just wanted to explain it. You're going to forgive me, but I wanted to explain some of the parameters to you. Some of them. That'll be sort of just scratch the surface. But what does the word Eruv really mean? We've spent this whole time talking about what's not an Eruv. This is called Tumas HaPesach, whether the screens work or not, whether the Rabbim has been both Jews will cancel the Mechitza. What does the word Eruv mean? We mentioned last week, after you have a Rishus HaYachid, which is achieved either by walls, fences, streams, however you do it, it's still a problem. If the Rishus HaYachid is owned and lived in, I should say, by two Jewish or observant families or more, you have to make an Eruv HaTzeres. What does it consist of these days? You make out of a box of matzahs. A box of matzahs. If there are two Jews in a two-family house, and they want to be able to carry in the commonly used property, such as the backyard, not only a fence, has to make an Eruv HaTzeres. Well, if they want Eruv in the whole town, so that's exclusive. Well, that's what it comes with to say. Problem. How do you make an Eruv in an apartment building? You don't own the hallway. How do you carry an Eruv? I said there are two Jews in the apartment building. Very nice. They're all the 50 guys. Or non-observant Jews, whoever's there. What do? We don't commonly share the hall, the exclusion of all other tenants. Everyone uses it. So you should have to go to every single tenant in the apartment building, and if he's a non-Jew, the rabbis have an 8. I'll come back with an answer. Okay. To pick it up for all the observant families.